Hello, my name is Colin Daniels. I'm the Working Age and Young People Service Manager for the Macular Society. Now, as you might know, the Macular Society hosts two live webinars each month focusing on all aspects of living with macular disease. We speak to leading experts, clinicians, and researchers about the latest in macular disease. The first of the webinars focuses very much on age-related macular degeneration, and the second on areas for people of a working age and a bit younger. Now, we understand that not everyone has the opportunity to watch our webinars, so we have decided to turn some of the content into podcasts. The podcasts will be available on all good podcast platforms. So here we go. Welcome to the first of my series of Macular and Me sessions for 2023. So as you know, we run two streams of webinars throughout the year, talking about on the one stream, talking about sort of AMD, age-related macular degeneration, and related subjects. And this session, which I run on the last Thursday of each month, which is about sort of working age issues, really. So macular dystrophies, DMO, that sort of stuff, condition-wise, with researchers and clinicians. And also sessions like this, which is just those things that we all want to think about, connected to our vision loss and what we might be entitled to. And I've got to be honest, I've really nearly filled the calendar this year with some really good speakers, so we'll keep them under our hats and sort of develop them as we go through the year. But who knows, your clinician or somebody you know might be speaking, who knows. So I'm going to give sort of talk about some benefits and cost of living stuff. And as we go through this, I'll pause as we go through for questions. I mean, there's lots and lots of changes constantly at the moment. So I've done my best to keep up with them. But to be honest, they change on a daily basis. So I did have a quick read up before coming on this evening around the cost of living, bits and pieces. But it might have changed. Who knows? But the last update we got was the 13th of January. And I think that's the most up to date. That nothing's really changed since then, really. So hopefully we're all on board with that. And we're going to talk about disability benefits because they're important too. And the reason they're so important is because they can get you other benefits. If you make a successful claim for a personal independence payment or attendance allowance, then you might be entitled to other benefits off the back of that. So you might be wondering why what gives me the right to talk about this stuff. I've been a welfare rights officer for about the last 15 years. I found out purely by accident, really, that because I'd claimed lots of benefits myself when I was a bit younger and unemployed, pretending I was retired, I started to learn the benefit system for blind and partially sighted people and disabled people in general, really, fairly well. And I also found that I was quite good at claiming them for other people. So in my role for Action for Blind People, if you remember that charity from a few years ago, that's kind of what I did. So I've supported people from claims right up through to tribunals. I was going to say 10, but actually I've done two tribunals recently for a couple of friends of mine, and I won those two. So I did to get it all paperworked out of the way. So I've not lost a tribunal yet, which is good going, isn't it? I think so. First, I think it's most important that we talk about registration, because being registered as partially sighted or blind, sight impaired or severely sight impaired, is not a given for a qualifying for disability benefits. It does help. It's really, really strong evidence to be living with some kind of significant sight loss. But it's not a given that you'll get the benefit that you claim. And the reason for that is because when people make claims for benefit, they sometimes forget to do the most important part, which is to evidence their claim. So when you claim a benefit, like either PIP, a personal independence payment, or attendance allowance, which are the two main disability benefits, you must answer the question by saying what you would do, how you do something, why you struggle with it. And I know it's daft, but you actually have to say, because of my eyesight, and then evidence what can possibly go wrong. So, for example, I'm peeling potatoes, which I can't see the potato peel because of my eyes, and I can peel all the potato away, and I have sometimes cut my finger. Now, that seems a bit drastic, but it is the kind of thing they're looking for. A list of I am unable to do something is not good enough. They just go, well, you know, I can't do that either. So if you evidence it and target your vision or any other health condition you have, you may have others that impact as well. Then if you can evidence it against that, then you start to score points or against those. Against that evidence, which from the decision maker's handbook, and there is one. It's massive. I've seen it. It's huge. So it's important to say the right things. So I think we'll do it this way around. I think we'll start with personal independence payment. Now, personal independence payment is for people between the age of 16 and pension age. Now, I say pension age because, as we know, pension age is moving. So we're all heading up to join up, both men and women who are going to join up at 67. And then who knows, it will probably go on a bit further, but who knows. But at the moment, we will all join up and be our retirement age. The state retirement age will be 67. Personal independence payment is paid in two parts. It's paid in a mobility component and a daily living component. And both of those components are paid out at a standard and an enhanced rate, so low and high, if you like. And you can get one of those components, both of those components, one at low, one at high, or both at high, or both at low. So there's quite a lot of variation in how you can claim or what you can be awarded. Now, this was the second benefit to be points based. So a lot of descriptors were created against each question in the form, and points awarded to how you could achieve those tasks. So the first one is preparing a meal. So if you're unable to prepare a meal at all, and someone has to do it for you completely, you will score 8 points. Now, 8 points is the minimum that you need to get for the standard rate. So 8 points gets you the standard rate. Now, to get the maximum, the enhanced rate, you need to score 4 points. Now, I would suggest if it's likely that someone needs to cook food for you, that you'll probably score 4 points somewhere else. So, and the questions are about preparing food, using the toilet, getting dressed, washed, communicating with people, mixing with people, and looking after money. But the most important one for us as people with sight loss is question 10, descriptor 8, which is reading, identifying signs, symbols, and words. And that's the one that we have to concentrate on. And I say that because if you need a bit of help reading, so someone has to read your letters for you, or an electronic device reads your letters for you, like mine, so I can't access printed text at all. I have to rely on someone else to read for me, or my clever gadgets read for me too. Then you'll automatically score 8 points. So if they're, and you're on the standard rate of the daily living component. So, and then if you can score 2 points somewhere or four points somewhere else, then you'll get the enhanced rate. So in the kitchen, for example, if you need to use an aid or get a bit of help from someone else on for basic cooking, you'll score 2 points. So there's two. And because most of us with macular disease can't see people's faces, that's mixing with people. So that's 2 points. So there's your 12. You see, so it's quite straightforward. So reading is the most important. So if you're able to do some basic reading with an aid or an adaption, like a magnifier, maybe a piece of equipment that you use to read, and you're actually reading the text yourself. If you're reading quite complex text, you'll score 2 points. But the middle one is if it's basic text, what I call emergency reading, sort of sell by dates and that sort of stuff, you'll score 4. And again, kitchen, mixing with people, generally you'll score some points there as well, which will get you onto the standard rate. Now, the mobility component, similarly, 8 points for the standard rate, 12 points for for the enhanced rate. So, if you've got no mobility issues, physical mobility issues, you'll score your points through sight impairment or through what's the question is planning a journey. So if you need to use an aid or a guide dog, or they call it assistance dog, aid assistance dogs, or another person in a familiar area. So as soon as you leave your house, you need that support. So you're using a white cane, for example, or Woody, my guide dog. Well, you can't use Woody, my guide dog, because he's mine, but you get the picture. Or you're relying on your partner or maybe a friend. As soon as you leave the house, that's automatically 12 points. Bish, bash, bosh. So that's the enhanced rate. And then if you're not quite at that stage, but in an unfamiliar area, you're having the same sort of difficulties, you're using a cane or a dog or a person, then you'll automatically score 10 points. Again, though, the most important thing to remember with this is to evidence that. Explain it when it's gone wrong. You know, if you've missed your bus and, you know, had to get a taxi, which has cost XYZ amount of money, tell them about that. And remember, if you're on your own and you're in somewhere unfamiliar and you're having a struggle, if you turn around to somebody and say, where's the train station? And they direct you, that's sighted support, because you can't read the signs. So that's sighted support. So it counts. If you ask the person standing at the bus stop with next to you, what number's that bus? That's sighted support. So that counts. Okay. So if you need any kind of, you need an aid and appliance, or I need help from somebody else, it always enhances how many points you're going to score. All right. So the most important thing to think about when you're talking about personal independence payment is points really make an award, and to evidence your claim. Now, we're going to talk about this. This might entitle you to other benefits, but we'll talk about them briefly in a second. But we're just going to touch on attendance allowance. So attendance allowance is a similar benefit to personal independence payment, but it's for people over a pension age. So that at the moment, that's about 66 in a couple of months, or if you've already retired, obviously. So if you're already getting your state pension, then that's the benefit you claim. Now, this has only got one component. It doesn't have a mobility component. Don't ask me why. Over the age of whatever pension age, you obviously don't go out. And also you don't eat, because cooking does not count. All right. Don't ask me why. I have no clue. It's one of the anomalies of the benefit system. So attendance allowance is an incredibly difficult benefit to claim. It's very, very difficult, but it's at two rates, and it's at low and at high rate. Now, To qualify for the low rate, you have to show that you need support from another person day or night. The important word there is or. And to get the high rate, you need to show that you need support, care from another person with a daily task to support you both day and night. So there's the rub there. So or for the low rate. And for the high rate. Now, again, it covers all aspects of daily living, and from getting up in the morning, getting in and out of bed, using the loo, washing, dressing, eating but not cooking, reading. There is a bit about communication in there, which again we can always score points at. Now, attendance allowance is a bit old school in this way, because you'll either score points on a physical or sensory disability or illness. So sort of maybe arthritis or osteoporosis, something like that. And then maybe sight loss or something. I mean, you don't need anything other than sight loss, but, or you'll get it for mental health reasons. So sort of dementia and that sort of thing. If you're going down that way, hopefully you're not, but so you'll either get it for one or the other. So, but again, it's about evidencing that claim. So again, if you're talking about getting out of bed, where does getting out of bed start? You know, where does getting out of bed start? Might just be sitting up in bed. What happens if you get up too quick? I can be unsteady and I have fallen. So it's those things to think about when you're making the claim for attendance allowance. Now, the best people in the UK for helping anybody, usually over the age of 55, with personal independence payment, or and definitely attendance allowance is Age UK. Age UK will come around. They've all got mostly got most of the various Age UK places all over the country have got welfare rights. People that work for them and also volunteers to do form fills. So if you can get some support with filling these forms in from somebody that knows how to do it, you're more likely to be successful. As I say, Age UK are brilliant. There's Citizens Advice Bureau in Scotland is very good as well. But in England and Wales and sort of Northern Ireland, I think Age UK is probably the best people to go to. Or if push really comes to shove, if you contact DWP with the form and tell them that you have the form, you could be referred through to the DWP's home visiting service, who will actually come and help you fill that form out as well. Now, I've trained a few of the DWP home visiting people back in a few years ago in and how to understand sight loss, and their hit rate is very good for attendance allowance. So my advice for anybody that's over the age of 55 and wants to help filling in a form, talk to Age UK though. I think it's brilliant. I think they're fantastic. So attendance allowance and personal independence payment. They're both non-means tested benefits. And at the moment, that's so important. So if you make a successful claim, you will get an increase in your income. And it's not affected by any other money that you have. So you could be a millionaire and you could still claim PIP if you are under pension age and attendance allowance if you are over pension age, because you're either entitled to them under the rules or you're not. And the majority of people with significant sight loss, even if you're not registered, but if that is impacting on you day to day and you can evidence that well or get a bit of support from someone that can help you do that, you should be able to make a successful claim. At this point, it's worth saying that I'm happy to talk to anybody about benefits, or you can speak to the Macular Society advice and information line, and we can try and find someone in your area to help you complete the form. Now, off the back of PIP and attendance allowance, it does open the door to various different benefits. So attendance allowance will increase what is called your minimum pension guarantee. So it might open the door to pension credits. Now, pension credits has been around for many years, and it's all based on this thing called the minimum pension guarantee. So the government says that older people over pension age need X or Y amount of money to live on. And it really does depend on your circumstances. So if you're a single person living alone, you need a bit less. But if you're a couple, you need a little bit more. So you might, but it does depend on the pensions that you have coming in. So let's just say that there's a single Mrs. Miggins, single lady living on her own. Husband passed away, sadly, and she's only got her state pension, but her dependent state pension. So she never worked because her husband always did all brought the money in a bit. So her money would be topped up by pension credit, okay, up to that minimum pension guarantee. All right. Now, the minimum pension guarantee at the moment is around about £152. He says struggling for a number. But if Mrs. Miggins, because her macular degeneration, makes an effective claim, a successful claim for attendance allowance, that's going to move her pension minimum pension guarantee up to it's an additional £62. So that it'll take it up that much. So you can see how that money is increased immediately, and she still gets her attendance allowance as well. So it's all about if disability benefits claimed at the right time can increase your income. The other thing that might do, so let's just say Mrs. Miggins this time, she's still living on her own. She's got a dependent state pension because of her husband, but she's also got, because of her husband, she's got his forces pension. Okay. And he was quite high up in the forces. So that's quite a significant sum of money, which takes her just over minimum pension guarantee. So she would, if she claimed attendance allowance and got that top up, she would then be entitled to, that would top up her minimum pension guarantee would be topped up. Okay. And therefore she would on a means tested benefit, any means-tested benefit, whether it's universal credit or pension credit, will entitle you to some other benefits like help with your council tax. If you are reaching pension age and you should really claim PIP, because if you claim personal independence payment, you will remain on that for the length of time that you're awarded it. And if your claim, so if they award it to you for, say, let's say 3 years, you'll be renewed. Even if you're in a pension, off pension age, the renewal will, you'll be renewed and you'll remain on PIP. So the big thing here is, the thing to consider, remember about that, is that there is no mobility allowance in attendance allowance. So because of that, when you get renewed, you will not be renewed onto mobility. But if your claim is longer, you will remain on mobility and daily living for the length of your award. Now, most people get it these days. If you've got significant sight loss, registered severely sight impaired, or even sight impaired, they'll give you quite an extended award. So there's no such thing as a lifetime award anymore. They removed that with personal independence payment. And some would argue rightly so, but some would argue not. I'm one of those that says if your eyesight's broken and there's no cure, they may as well just give you an ongoing award. Also, I think it's worth also talking about personal independence payment. That used to have some premiums within universal credit. They used to be great. They're not so great anymore. You'll get a little bit of an uplift in universal credit if you're claiming that, but it's not as big as it used to be. But if you're claiming universal credit under Real Health, your certificate of visual impairment will help keep them, sort of make them, help them leave you alone a bit, I suppose, is the best way of saying that. Even though work is very important, and if you can work, you should try and endeavor to. Anyway, I think I'm not going to talk about carer's allowance. And the reason I'm not going to talk about carer's allowance is because it's very complicated, and it really does depend on people's circumstances. The only thing I will say about it is, if you get attendance allowance at any level and the daily living component allowance of PIP, then you will be entitled to claim carer's allowance. But just be very wary before you do, because it's got lots and lots of pitfalls. Okay, so cost of living crisis. We're all broke, aren't we? Everything's getting more expensive. Inflation's up to whatever it is. That's about 11 or 12% or something at the moment. I think it's snuck up to 14 at one point. So everything is getting a bit more pricey. So what has the government put in place? And how, as disabled people or people with sight loss, what do we get out of that additional money compared with others with average sight? Is probably a better way of putting that. So the reason I spoke about attendance allowance and personal independence payment was because we do get a couple of additional bits and pieces, and it's worth thinking about. So the first thing, obviously, we need to talk about is the energy, our bills, our energy bills. They're going through the app. They're going through the roof. Very, very lucky if you manage to fix your term in before all this, everything hit the proverbial. But it's, cost of fuel and cost of energy has gone up through the roof. One of the ways to save money with this, we keep being told, is having a smart meter. Now, I have smart meters. And I didn't get put in. I was trying to find a posh word and couldn't find one. Installed. Let's try that one. And I got my smart meters installed. And that's the reason I didn't, actually, was because I can't read them. For those of you who don't know, I've got Stargardt disease, so I can't read them. So I didn't really see the point of having one installed, because there were no talking ones around at the moment. Now, I'm happy to say that RNIB have been on this, and they've managed to achieve what seemed an impossible task. RNIB have managed to acquire or get created a talking and large print smart meter display. It connects most of the energy companies know about it, know it exists, and you can contact your energy company and ask for it to be installed If they can't find it, direct them to the RNIB website. Monitoring your gas and electricity intake, it is a way of saving money. Now, I can't believe that it's going to be, you know, going to save you that much money, but every little counts at the moment. And a display that will speak out what electricity you've used in a day or in an hour, I don't really want to know that personally, but will really help you budget. You might realize that there's too many lights on, or there's something you can turn some electricity or appliances off that you're not using, that sort of thing. I was also told about an app which is available on iOS or Apple and Android devices called Loop Energy. Now, Loop Energy is an app that will, from your phone, will connect to your smart meters, and the industry recognize it. So and are working with Loop to have your smart meter readings in the palm of your hand. Now, I've downloaded it. I was told this by a member of the Salisbury's online support group. I've downloaded it, and it just takes a couple of days for it to connect to your smart meters, because they have to speak. I'm with Ovo, so they've got to speak with Ovo and all of that stuff. But but it will be on my phone. And so far, I will tell you that I found it to be very accessible. I use VoiceOver on my iPhone. But it seems to be, I've got some color definition, so it seems to be big and bright. It will work with Zooms, because everything seems to, or tends to. It, on Android, there's TalkBack and whatever magnifier you choose to, or screen magnification you choose to download. So that's called Loop Energy, and it's very easy to set up. And it found my smart meters really easily. I didn't even get out of my recliner while I was setting it up. And it appears to be quite accessible. So that's something to think about. While we're talking about energy, we all know that the government's payment scheme is apparently saving the average household £900 a year. We also know that that's coming to a close in April. The new scheme should save us £500 a year, allegedly, as long as the prices don't go up much more. So that's the main thing, which every household, or pretty much every household in the UK, gets. Moving on from that, we also got some payments. So now, those people that are on prepayment meters, the all the troubles and woes of that are slowly starting to be ironed out, and the people are getting their vouchers. Those people that didn't realize they got their vouchers are getting replacement vouchers. So it's all being sorted out slowly but surely. It was a pig's dinner, really, or a dog's dinner when they rolled that out. But anyway, that's all getting sorted out. So they're getting their £400 eventually. Obviously, there was a bit of a delay for those people living in Northern Ireland. That's also been sorted out. So people in Northern Ireland should be receiving a £600 one-off payment towards their gas and electricity bills from the Northern Ireland Assembly from January. Sometime over the next couple of months, you'll be receiving that. And the enhanced cold weather payments for people of pension age has been enhanced this year. And if you haven't received your one for this year, then it's past the point where you would have got it. So you need to be contacting the cold weather payment service, a part of pension service, to talk about that for that payment. That's £300, and that payment is being matched again for the winter 23-24 of an additional £300. So that's been enhanced by £100. So theoretically, you shouldn't have to do anything to receive that cold weather payment. It should just go automatically to where your pensions, your state pension, gets paid to you. So if you miss it, if you don't see it by sort of mid-January now or mid-January 24, just give the cold weather payment people a call. Now, that leaves us, doesn't it? That leaves people like who might be working. Now, we've all had a part or some or all of our £400 payment towards our energy costs. If you're on direct debit, you're getting £66 a month as a rebate. I get it directly into my bank account, which is quite nice. And that lasts until from October till April or March. So March, rather, so that's 6 months. So you get a 6 month pay of £66. So that runs out. That's not being reintroduced, sadly. So it was quite nice. But again, if you're on PIP, or attendance allowance, there is a one-off summer payment in the summer 2023 of £150. Don't ask me why, but there is, and it's nice. It's useful, especially with the cost of living as it is at the moment. So personal independence payment, and you will get an £150 payment in the summer. Now, other households, if those people on low incomes, so maybe on universal credit, or might be all part-time workers topped up by universal credit, there are some payments due as well. So there's a £900 over three payments. Now, these aren't set in stone, but I found out when roughly they're going to get paid. They've not been set in stone. Not my words, actually, on the document that I read. So the first payment you can expect of that £900 is in the spring of 2023. Yes, that ambiguous, the spring. And that's a payment of £299. Don't ask me why. And then there'll be another payment of £300 in the summer of 2023. Again, no real date, but in the summer. And then for some reason, there's a big gap. And then the next payment is paid in the new year. So in early spring 2024. And that's £301. I would guess those payments are, or the times of those payments are subject to change. I am a cynical old bugger, and I don't believe anything until it actually happens. The money is going to come. It's just those dates and times. Really, I mean, if you are on, you could get as much. If you're a vulnerable person, classified as a vulnerable person, you may also get that cold weather payment. So theoretically, if you're on PIP and universal credit and a vulnerable person, you could get up to 13. Hang on, we're doing the maths now. Yeah, £1,350 over the next, well, from April to next end of next March, which seems like an awful lot of money. And but it is at this moment going to be incredibly helpful. Again, it's worth mentioning that we do not have to make any claims for these benefits or these additional funds. They will, if you're claiming the right benefit or you're claiming things like PIP, those payments will go into the account that you get paid into. The energy price, the energy prices, they're already going into your accounts, so they will just continue. And we'll just have to wait and see what they've got up their sleeves for us for next year. Hopefully things around the world will calm down, and the cost of energy will come down with it, and therefore the cost of inflation will come down. I just hope, I really do hope, that when these prices start coming down, we do see that reflected in our bills, because the wholesale value price of gas has actually come down quite considerably. And we're still not seeing that really reflected in our bills at the moment. So I think that's something that needs to be looked at from them who looks at those things. Far be it from me to say who that is. So we'll talk about this. Well, we can talk about carers allowance. Let's do that. And the pitfalls of it. So this is all about getting money into our pocket. And as I said, if you claim carers allowance without understanding the ramifications, it can have a detrimental effect on other monies. So if we talk about, you've made a successful claim for PIP, you're on the daily living component, either at the standard or the enhanced rate, and you live with someone, you live with your partner, and they think, oh, cracking, I can apply for carers allowance. The carers allowance is a means-tested benefit, so it does matter what you've got coming in. So if your partner has more than £112 coming in any way, so whether that be a pension, whether that be income from a job, whether, to be honest, any kind of income, if more than £112, you won't. It's pointless claiming carers allowance, because that payment, you will not receive any money in carers allowance. It gets written off. It's a pointless claim. Now, the other thing to consider, let's just say that we're talking about my friend Mrs. Miggins again, our nice pensioner who's living on her own because her husband's died, and you're their granddaughter, grandson, and you spend an awful lot of time going around and looking after Mrs. Miggins and taking her shopping and all that business. And she's got her pension credits topped up right up because she's got her attendance allowance. So, and she says to you, well, you're doing an awful lot for me. We should claim carer's allowance for you because I've been told I can claim that. Now, if you, again, if you don't, if you're under £112 a week and you find yourself claiming carer's allowance, she will then lose her disability pension credit section. So that additional 60 odd quid, she will lose that. So you can actually make her worse off by her trying to help you. It's so, as I say, it's incredibly complicated. So it's really worth thinking about. I think it's important to point out that quite a lot of people, especially with macular disease, acquire a sight loss later on in life, whether they're over pension age or not. It tends to start when they're a bit older. So there's people like myself who get it very young, but the majority of people start seeing the effects of their conditions a bit later on, late 30s, early 40s and onwards. So the way that I've always done this when I've gone and sat with people, especially but people who are a bit older, so but pension age, is I explain that they've paid in, you know, so, and they've never really taken anything out. So those resources that they've paid in through tax and through national insurance and all of those kind of things, really, really, it's there for them. To claim those benefits. I also point out that living with sight loss at any level, really, when it starts impacting on your day to day, is quite expensive. So things like with macular disease in particular, we turn an awful lot of lights on. So your house is always lit up like a, you know, like the Blackpool illuminations. So you're able to see. That costs money. Finding a place on your own, or somewhere new especially, could be very difficult with changing buses or trains or whatever. And taxis are expensive, so that benefit is there to help pay for that taxi. Now, I'm on PIP because I'm registered severely sight impaired blind. And what I use my PIP for, one of the things I use my PIP for, is for a cleaner, because I like to live in a clean, tidy house. I can't see to clean it effectively, so I pay for that. So I explain to people how I use my PIP to enhance my life, and then they can see kind of where to use it and how to use it. Sometimes it doesn't work, sometimes it does. But, you know, if you're entitled to something, because you're hitting that criteria, especially if you're registered, because it's a really good piece of evidence, sight impaired, severely sight impaired, you're definitely in that ballpark, and they should definitely go for it. Personal independence payment and attendance allowance are non-means tested, but if you have an extended stay in hospital, they will stop for the period of time that you're in hospital. And you have to be out of hospital for 28 days, don't ask why, ambiguous number is 4 weeks, before the benefit will restart. And the reason for that is that you could relapse within that 4 week period. That's the time they give you, you may not relapse, so you might end up back in hospital in that time. So if you're in a, not that many people are these days, but if you're in a residential home, or if you've got a lot of family member in a residential home, a private residential home, you can keep your attendance allowance. A local authority residential home, you can't. But if you have a legacy benefit, something like disability living allowance or personal independence payment, you're living in a residential home, a local authority residential home, as I say, not many people are these days, you'll lose your daily living component, but you now no longer will lose your mobility component. You're allowed to keep that, which is, well, frankly, I'd say it's about time. It happened about eight and 10 years ago, but it was a thing back in the day where you'd lose it all, even your mobility allowance, even though it didn't pay for care, which was bizarre. Something about double funding, if anyone's questioning why that is. So you can't be funded for the same care twice out of the same pot, bottom line. Right, Okay, I think we've reached the end. So I think, what I'm going to do. So right, so just to recap on a couple of things. Okay, so if you're registered as sight impaired or severely sight impaired, and you're under pension age and over 16, please make a claim for personal independence payment. If you're over pension age and registered, sight impaired or severely sight impaired, or your vision is impacting on you to a point where it's impacting on your daily life, please claim attendance allowance. The government schemes are there, they're in place, they will help us, all of us, no matter what your income, we're all entitled to something, with the least being £150 for those people claiming PIP in the summer, and then up to for those people on who are on Universal Credit and other vulnerable people could be given up to £1,350 by the spring of 2024. These are automatic payments and will arrive. If they don't, then speak to when they're due to arrive, then speak to in the Universal Credit portal, or pension state pension people, the pension service, which was the expression I was struggling to find. I do think AGK is a really good resource for people claiming benefits, because they do form fills, and the CAB, Citizen Advice Bureau in Scotland. That's it, really.